going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Drew Hill covers the Grizzlies for the Daily Memphian. He'll be in the building tonight as the Grizzlies take on the Oklahoma City Thunder, Game 3. He joins every Thursday, and he joins us now. All right, Drew, how are we feeling?
Man, it feels like that Chris Brown song that Brad was just playing. It feels like it's been forever since I've seen the Grizzlies play a game in Memphis, and it's only been a handful of days. It was only Friday. That was a long trip. That was a rough trip. I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, it was just not competitive whatsoever. Didn't necessarily see all that much of what you hoped to see, and not a whole lot to take away from it, other than just how far this team is from OKC. So I'll let you guys steer the ship, but there wasn't a whole lot. Was not a whole lot, I thought, to make of those first two games that's at least fun to talk about, that's for sure.
Were you, Drew, did you find yourself at halftime of game two questioning their competitiveness, their effort level, like it felt like the national crews were doing, like it maybe, you know, felt like to me, if you were watching, I thought it was fair at halftime. There was certainly a response. What did you think? Were you surprised at half that there wasn't a stronger response to from the get-go? I realized they missed a lot of open shots to start the game.
I think they missed a lot of open shots, but they also, like, still struggled to get into their offense. Like, you know, like, yes, I think both can be true. Honestly, I was seeing that. DeMichael and I were sitting next to each other at the game. That's actually a point we both made to each other. So there's a lot of people pointing out that the Grizzlies are missing open shots. It doesn't really seem like the Grizzlies are getting too many open shots in that first half, although they did miss a few open ones. So I just think that the effort, obviously, it was fair to question it, but we just hadn't seen anything else all season. So it's hard to just say it's effort over and over and over again when no matter what the scenario is, the Thunder win by 20. You know, like, how do you – was it effort the first time?
No, I get it. Like, yeah.
You know, I guess that's the problem.
I hear what you're saying, and I don't even want to take you down that road because I know how big a mountain it is. I guess I'm more asking that question because I'm curious about buy-in. I'm curious about their belief, right? How much they really wanted to do this, how much they believed. And if it's just been maybe a half where we've seen, all right, now let's go. And Jaren did step up, you know, offensively. I'm wondering not so much about can effort really even this thing. It can't. I'm with you. You don't. No, it's more like are we getting a team that truly believes or one that's ready to go 1-2-3 Cancun? That's more what I'm asking in terms of your eyeballs.
I mean, it doesn't. Listen, like, Ja got asked about his mentality going into Game 3, and Ja's answer was he's ready to go home and get some time with his family. Like, that's Like, yeah. To me, I think this team is trying to treat this realistically. And this is actually something that I wrote in my column between games. And I still think everything I wrote in that column holds true. I'm glad I wrote it when I did, because I could have had – it was a possibility to hold on and wait to make some of the points that I wanted to make. And among them was, you know, what else do you want the players to say in this situation other than we're going to try to get back? Like, what they're going to say doesn't matter. It's just not going to matter. But I think what you're going to find out by the way that this team responds and the way that this sort of plays out is you're going to learn some lessons here, right? And they might be hard lessons to learn, but you're going to learn some lessons. You're going to learn what Jaren's made of, I think, at this point. And it was a good thing he showed up in that third quarter, because the first half was ugly again for Jaren.
Agreed.
And you're going to learn, you know, a little bit more about Isolo, I think. You're going to learn whether or not he can get the team to buy in and not completely lay down in the rest of the series. And, you know, I think we're going to learn just how far the Grizzlies have to go in this situation, because it's almost hard to believe, guys. Like, we're just sitting there after the game against OKC in game one, and I'm just going through my head, going through the OKC roster, going like, what guy on this team is not going to be here next year?
Right.
Oh, wait, none of them. They're all back. And then you're like, well, man, if they're this good, I don't even have interest in being good while they're this good. Because how the heck are you going to – how the heck is anyone going to beat this team? Like, that was what it felt like in that moment. And so it's this realization of how far you are from – being as good as them. And I think some of that, you know, definitely falls on the shoulders of Zach Kleiman. And so, like, there are lessons we're going to learn from this. A lot of them are going to suck to learn. But I think we're in the middle of doing that. And it's just been ugly from the beginning. And this is something that they asked for. This is something I still think is worthwhile. But it's challenging, and to me, it's also very challenging on the fan base. I'm very interested to see what the response is going to be down there tonight. And, you know, I know if you're in the shoes of the Grizzlies, you're probably, you know, hoping for nothing but sunshine and rainbows when it comes to this stuff, and the fans show up and go support their team. But, you know, this has been a hard week to swallow for everyone, for the players, for the fans, everything. So, I'm very interested to see what it's going to be like tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I think the hard part of this is that, you know, there's just – it feels like this Thunder team is adjustment-proof. They're matchup-proof. I mean, at least with what the Grizzlies have. Maybe there's some, you know, series down the line where there is one that a coach can make. But I think that's just the most demoralizing part about it, is like the Grizzlies don't have anything they can do other than hope that Desmond Bane – you know, shoots 50% from three, and Jaren, you know, has 30, and Ja has, like, it just seems like that's not a great plan. There is no great plan. I think that's the part of it that's the most demoralizing, Drew.
Yeah, it's funny because Isolo actually talked about this, and it was something that I noted, was, you know, he keeps talking about the team's identity. We got to stick to our identity and see how far that can take us against this team. We can't make wholesale changes and, like, you know, to what we do. Like, we've got to stick to this identity. And then after, you know, after he had mentioned that, I asked, like, what exactly was the team's identity? And he laid it out in three different steps about the way that they get shots. And, like, you know, it was a pretty extensive answer. And I thought about it, and this isn't even a criticism of him, but he does talk constantly about making things so simple. And I said, you know, for someone that talks about making things so simple, it doesn't seem to be a very simple identity. Now, it is when you break it down, but it's not when you explain it. But I bring that up to say, you know, it feels like the Grizzlies always were like, this is our idea. We're forging ahead with this no matter what. We're not making those adjustments. We're going to see how we stack up against this team because we have to treat this realistically. We have to, you know, we're just going to see where we stand. We probably, I think if you gave them truth serum, they would tell you we're probably not going to win this series. But at least let's get the most out of this that we possibly can. And maybe the way that you do that is by putting the feet to the fire here, right? and just trying to ask those three guys to step up and do it. And just trying to play the way that you think you can play in the future, and seeing how close you are to being able to do that productively. It feels like that's the strategy, right? It's not like we're going to make all these adjustments and try to get real weird and funky to try to go win a playoff series. It feels like the Grizzlies are like, we might struggle, but we're sticking through this, and we're going to at least get some value out of this by seeing how far we can come or we can go with this.
Yeah, Drew, we're going to try you back. We're going to try you back on another line. I don't know what's going on with those. You got the clickers again.
Although what he's describing is a lot like a root canal, is what I was thinking as he's describing it. It's necessary.
Yeah.
You've asked for it because you know you need to get to the other side.
That's right.
But there is no fun in a root canal.
No.
It very likely could be painful.
Yeah, and then you have to have the maintenance afterwards. You know, you got to make sure you stay on top of that root canal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Drew, you got us?
Yeah, I got you.
But yeah,
anyway,
no, you can just finish that point.
I was just saying they're not making adjustments. It feels like they've got this strategy. They're going to stick to it and see how far it could take them.
In terms of Jaren Jackson Jr., Drew, I've gathered from you and from Chris, and I've seen him on, you know, some NBA guys, you know, media guys, third team for all NBA. I'm curious, and I probably ask you a version of this every other week. But now that we're sort of, you know, we're here, are you expecting it still? And then with that would come from what, I've gathered from you and Drew, you and Chris, would be what, between $300 and $350 million that you could offer them? Are you expecting all that to happen?
Well, I think it's really thin whether or not he's going to become third team. We can't really know for sure. It seems like it's going to be really close when you look at the way that some of the voting has come out.
Yep.
So if he is, then it does open the door for you to do that and to be able to maintain a lot, not maintain, but like have more flexibility with the rest of the roster.
Right.
So the hope still is that answer is yes, right? If you're the Grizzlies, and that he does make the third team All NBA. The other avenue would be to renegotiate and then extend. But that gives you a lot less flexibility if you're going to fork over the money to Jaren, because you'd have to release the cap holds on multiple other players, which you might do anyway. But like that includes like Bagley, for example, so you wouldn't be able to hold on to players like him. You'd have to trade. You'd have to get off salary in order to free up money to renegotiate for next year. So whether that's John Conchar or Jay Huff or whoever it might be. So like there's just in order to free that money up, you might have to attach assets, right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, you certainly hope Jaren ends up third team All NBA still. Now, the question is, can you pay a player like Jaren, who has unquestionably underperformed in the playoffs, a contract that is not meant for a player like him?
That's where I was going.
A contract that is meant for players that are of the elite in the NBA. But there's multiple things in play here. You're a small market team. You're the Memphis Grizzlies. Mm-hmm. Like you, and to retain players like this, you pay a premium. It's just the reality of the situation. That's how it works. Like free agents aren't signing up to come to Memphis. They're not, if we're just going to call it realistically here. And so that is the way that it works. You have a star player who has enjoyed being in Memphis, has been a big part of the community, has represented the team well. And we can choose to look at this through the lens of the postseason and postseason success only.
Right.
But, I mean, I know that's the way that, like, most people, especially the online universe, chooses to view basketball. Mm-hmm. There's value in having a productive, dependable player that can make you postseason relevant, that can make you regular season relevant, like the way that Jaren Jackson has for the Memphis Grizzlies. Like, it stinks when your team, like, it's especially hard when no one gives a crap about the team because they have no shot at making the playoffs. And Jaren, really, if we're being honest, is the reason the Grizzlies are in the playoffs, because he helped them survive when Ja was hurt this year and meant the most. Like, he still, in terms of who had the greatest impact on the regular season, that was Jaren. So, you know, those players still hold value. Like, to just completely devalue a player like that because of the postseason performances, which I understand are frustrating, that's not fair either. So maybe the answer's somewhere here in the middle. But it seems like it would be pretty extreme, right, to give a player that hasn't given you all that much in the postseason
right.
a wildly expensive contract.
Especially, you know, as invested as you are right now in Bain and then with Ja. I mean, that's the issue. It becomes math, right? I mean, that's part of the issue here.
The number one question I'm looking forward to asking when the season is over is asking general manager Zach Kleiman if he still has the belief that these three players can take this team to where he has said that they can take them.
That's where we are.
To a championship.
That's where we are. Yes, you're 100%.
And I would.
I can't wait to hear his answer. Good question.
I would like to hear an answer to that. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if the answer is that he still believes that, you know? And maybe he does, but it's hard.
I would just say, in your expert opinion, if you go into that final year of Jaren's deal, no matter whatever happens, you go into it, what would his value be in your estimation on the trade market, if, say, you did something with him at the deadline? Say you just in some form run it back with the three, but the thing's broken, whether you stayed with Isolo or not, and it's deadline time. He's on an expiring at that point, right, if you've done nothing to extend. And I'm not saying we get to there, but I want to ask, what would his trade value be, do you think?
I mean, he would certainly be valued as a championship level piece to some contending team. He's not going to have the value of, like, Luka, you know. He might have more value. It's interesting. He might have more value than Ja Morant, if we're just talking pure trade, given he doesn't have any of the off-court stuff that's happened to him over the career. He hasn't, you know,
and he's beaten the injury factor, right? That was early in his career. To add to your points,
I think there's no question that he has more trade value.
I like where you're going with this, Drew.
There's just no doubt.
I think that might be the case. But here's the thing: like, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
I
think we're going to know. Here's what the Grizzlies have to figure out. Let's just put it this way: here's what the Grizzlies have to figure out. They can put an offer on the table this summer for Jaren, and there's still plenty of reasons why Jaren would just say no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to go into it, like, because he can get more years. He can get an extra year if he waits until next offseason. No matter what, the Grizzlies are going to be able to pay him more money, so it's not like he's going to lose out on the opportunity of more future money by saying no necessarily. So there's several reasons why Jaren doesn't have to sign anything this summer if he doesn't want to.
I thought so.
Now, the Grizzlies can be optimistic about whether or not Jaren wants to sign. We really have no idea how that dynamic is, because we don't know, you know, what's going to be offered or anything like that. But it's certainly possible that Jaren could just say, nah, like, I'm not going to do it. Let me play out next season.
Yep.
Maybe I'll be a super max level player if he doesn't make all NBA. Like, this offseason. Now, if he makes all NBA, like, all this I'm discussing might go out the window, because none of it really matters.
100%.
It would become his time to strike, right?
Right.
So if he makes all NBA, all of this sort of changes. But it's certainly possible that they could do that. Well, then it's going to be the Grizzlies' job next season to say, okay, look, what is our confidence level that Jaren's going to sign a deal with us? We can still offer more years. We can still offer more money. What's the confidence level that Jaren's going to sign the deal with us? Is it high? Is it low? We have to know that, because if Jaren walks out that door for nothing, it is malpractice on the part of the organization, and I think they know that. So you know, it's going to be a fascinating summer. It starts with Jarrett. It's why that game was so big, and it was a big deal that he played a lot better in the second half there. But it's going to be a fascinating summer of Jaren Jackson. And there's going to be a lot to debate because he has opened this door for scrutiny by not playing well in the postseason. He has done it to himself, and I think he understands that.
Yeah,
it's the truth.
Around the NBA playoffs, who has impressed you outside of this Thunder Grizzly series? Who's caught your eye?
I mean, I've just had a blast watching that Nuggets and Clippers series. You know, it just feels like that thing's going to head to seven games, right? It just feels like that's super likely. And Kawhi obviously is one of the best players in the freaking world when the postseason lights come on and he is healthy. And so to me, man, that's just so fun. Like, that's what I've had. I didn't get a chance to watch all of those games while I was out in OKC. You know, I had to take a break from basketball last night. I had to put it off, turn the TV off for the night.
I don't blame you.
Said,
yeah. Well, Jimmy busted his ass.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it might be serious.
But I've had a lot of fun so far watching the first two games of Nuggets and Clippers. That's probably to me the best series of the first round. I don't know how you guys feel. And you know what, Pistons and Knicks have been really fun too.
Yeah, it has been fun. I like seeing these scrappy Pistons that don't know any better now. That, you know, had the worst record. What was it, two straight years there, had that nasty losing streak. It's JB, who we know. And that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, he'd obviously be high on a list, especially when you look at the roster is essentially the same that Monty had. I guess they've made some adjustments. But who would get your vote, Drew, for Coach of the Year, and then where would JB sort of be on that list? Is he in the top five of your list? I figured. I mean, he's got to be high on most people's lists, although I realize sometimes we go with, okay, runaway. You know, Dagnall's a good candidate because they ran away with it. Which way would you lean?
Yeah, I think I lean slightly toward Dagnall just because of the net rating thing.
They tore it up.
Because,
right, I get it. You're worried about it.
Yeah, because analytically, like, basketball has become so analytical now, right? It's like, true. Such a big part of the game. And, like, we measure greatness not off the same, you know, ways that we measured greatness even back in the 90s, and we measure greatness now based on net ranking and on-off, you know, stats and all that stuff. And, you know, when you go to the advanced numbers, there's literally never been a team as good as the Thunder. And I think that they really represent what is the peak regular season team of this era of basketball. So, you know, if you're considering this slightly different than the Warriors team that obviously won the most games. But I think on a net ranking basis, the Thunder have been even better than that. So I'd probably go Dagnall, but I would go JB second because I think the Pistons are the kind of a story of the NBA. Nobody really expected them to be this good.
Yep.
You know, cool story. I hope Cade. You know, continues to take in the honors because I think he really deserves it.
Agreed.
He's taking a big step up. So I think it's right there. I wouldn't have any problem if you voted JB or Dagnall. I would probably lean Dagnall just because of how elite the Thunder were, but JB is certainly a deserving candidate.
Yeah, and then the last thing, we'd be remiss if we did not ask you about what could be a fortuitous night for the Chicago Bears organization. There is some movement in the betting odds markets that the market expects a trade up.
We have that extra second rounder, as you know, Drew.
Are you hoping / expecting Ashton Jeanty tonight?
Oh gosh.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hope or expect Jeanty. I would be fired up if it was Jeanty. I'd be so excited. So don't get me wrong.
Well, you're not getting him at 10. You're going to have to do something.
I would come to your house uninvited. If they get Jeanty, I'm just showing up at your door. I don't even know where you live, but I'll find out because I want to high-five you if we get Jeanty.
The Bears are now the favorite at FanDuel to draft Ashton Jeanty.
You have got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
I thought
it was still the Jags.
It's the Jags.
It's moved. I'm telling you.
He's just getting our hopes up, Drew. That's all he's doing.
When you get off the phone,
listen, I'd be fine with it, but here's the thing. I feel like I'm going to be happy with no matter what the Bears do here because I feel fairly certain they're going to go offense here, like without question, now that Ben Johnson's the coach. I wouldn't be shocked if they like traded up and like if they really like Will Campbell, the tackle from LSU. Like we saw how good the Lions were when they had Penei Sewell and like sort of when he has that offensive lineman weapon. It wouldn't surprise me if the Bears made a trade up and did something like that. Or they could sit at 10 and they could get one of the tight ends, Tyler Warren.